Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we bring you exciting new guests, of course, to talk about various aspects of UFOs and the paranormal. And if you didn't get a chance to listen to last week's show, boy, you missed a real treat. Our guest was Michael Schratt, S-C-H-R-A-T-T, and he talked about his specialty of a study, which is the black budget, the United States government black budget, in regards to the production of secret military aircraft. And while he had a lot of information to share, it turns out we do have very advanced aircraft, stealth aircraft, that make no noise at all, can do vertical takeoff and landings, move at very high speeds, and there's definitely a link with UFOs in this regard, because a lot of this technology does appear to have been actually reverse engineered from UFOs. So, very interesting guest. He had just a lot of amazing stories to tell. I'm going to have him back on again because we didn't even get to finish. But if you didn't get a chance to hear about Michael Schratt, again, the shows are all archived on the BBS website, so feel free to visit the archives section and check it out. And tonight we're going to talk again about my favorite subject, UFOs. I've written 8 books on this subject, so I think it's a huge, huge field. It's going to be a lot of changes upcoming up ahead, I think, in people's awareness of UFOs. And our guest tonight is, we're all very honored to have him on tonight, because he's actually been researching this subject for quite some time, in particular in regards to the Pine Bush, New York hotspot. Pine Bush, as you may know, was originally made famous, I think, back in the 1980s through Philip Imbrogno's book, Night Siege, and probably more in particular, Ellen Crystal's book, which the title is escaping me now, but it was about her investigations into Silent Invasion, that's what it was called, about her investigations into Pine Bush, which is one of New York State's major UFO hotspots. And our guest tonight, his name is Phil Koseski, has actually visited this area many times and had some encounters of himself, for himself. So we're going to be hearing some interesting stories tonight, and I am very happy to welcome our guest, Phil Koseski. Phil, thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Hi, Preston. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you know, I'm very interested, of course, in New York State encounters, because I actually wrote a book, UFOs Over New York, recently, and I'm very aware of the whole Pine Bush phenomenon, so I'm really excited to hear about your experiences in that regard. But before you get into it, how did you get involved in this whole subject?
You know
what I mean? Were you sure. Skeptical of UFOs? You know, I was skeptical coming in, and it hit me like a ton of bricks.
I've never really been skeptical, because way, way back in 1984, I saw something out in Nevada when I was out working at a gold mine. And I saw something that was out near the Tonopah Range. It was out near, I guess, Area 51. But I saw something out there when I was camped out on a hill. But anyway, I always believed in extraterrestrial life.
What did you see at the Tonopah?
Tonopah Range?
Yeah.
The hill range, yeah. I saw something out there, and it absolutely convinced me that UFOs are real, because this thing just, whatever it was some kind of a disc, and it was just stopped in midair over me, and it was just bobbing up and down like a yo-yo on a string. And
wow.
I was shocked when I saw that, and I just knew from then on. Pardon me?
This was during the day?
No, it was at nighttime.
Okay.
I was camped out on a hill out there, and I was just looking at the stars, and I saw this object that looked kind of saucer-shaped, and it was very high up. But you could make out some kind of a saucer shape to it. And when it came right over me, it stopped all of a sudden. And I thought that was unusual, because I just thought it was some kind of maybe an airplane or a star or something, or like some kind of military object or something, but it stopped. And then it just started bobbing like a yo-yo. Anyway, ever since that time, I always believed in UFOs, and I always thought it was, I never really paid it too much attention after that. That was way back in 1984, and then 1992, 93 came around, and that's when I really became awakened to the whole idea of UFO, I mean, the whole understanding of UFOs and contacts and all these kinds of things. And I read a book, of course, to familiarize me about these sightings in New York, and that book I think you had just mentioned by Ellen Crystal.
Right, right.
Yeah, Silent Invasion. I read that book. I became incredibly convinced about her sightings. And so a friend and I decided to take a trip out there back in 1993 in July, and this was my first trip out to New York, out that area, and we started seeing things in the sky, and we started seeing lights that were behaving unorthodox, unconventionally, and one light in particular just suddenly appeared over some farm fields. And this light was very low. It was only not more than 100 feet above the ground. And it was pulsating on and off, on and off, on and off. And it just kind of hung there and pulsated, and had this definite, type of plasma quality to the light that looked like liquid light. And we got about a 3 or 4 minute clip of this on video, which amazed us.
Wow.
And
how close do you think it was?
It was probably maybe a quarter mile to a half a mile away at the most. It's fairly close.
Could you get any closer? Were you able to?
No, and then it eventually our tape ran out and we couldn't film it anymore. But then we drove around. That was a remarkable sighting, but it was in the beginning of the night. Of our whole night out there, the sightings that we saw and got, and little did we know what we were in for. About a half hour down the line, we drove around to one of the towns adjacent to Pine Bush. I think it was Wauquill or Montgomery. So we drove around out there, and all of a sudden I was sitting in the passenger side, and all of a sudden I saw something rise out of the field, and it was glittering. Literally, it looked like a glittering diamond with fireworks inside of a crystal. And it was all sparkling, like fireworks, inside of this crystal, and it was some kind of triangular-shaped object. And it was just the most, I just was in shock when I saw this, because it rose right up out of this farm field, straight up into the night sky, made no sound, and it rose up so fast that we couldn't stop the car and get out and get any kind of video of it. But it was the most shocking sighting I think I've ever seen, and it totally convinced, I was totally convinced that what I had seen or saw that night was alien.
How big do you think it was? Just estimating.
Estimate was hard to estimate, but I'd say maybe 30 feet in diameter.
Interesting.
But it was shocking.
Do you think that they were reacting to you in any way? I mean, did you get any, I guess, telepathic messages at any point?
Not at this time. This was over 15, 14 years ago now. Not at this time, but I do think that the aliens were aware of us, and they decided to give us these two really kind of close sightings that were kind of special because they knew that we believed in them. And from my most recent trips out there, which began again back in, just in 2007 now, just a little over a year and a half ago now, my more recent trips have proved demonstrably to me that the aliens are very aware of who I am and have communicated to me and everything, but we can get into that a little bit down the line. I just wanted to remark some more that what happened that first night out there was so convincing.
This was all the first night?
Back in 1993, yeah, when I took the trip out there. And that was just totally convincing to me, and I became absolutely persuaded about it.
You know, there's another guy who wrote a book about his investigation into Pine Bush, Vinny Police.
Oh yes, he has one of the best websites up on. In fact, I think it's the only sole website up outside of mine. Mine is like kind of a secondary thing. I call it the Pine Bush Zone. That's my website, but it's under a different URL. So if anybody wants to find it, they can just type in do a Google search, just type in the Pine Bush Zone, and they will get it.
Right. Well, it's interesting. A lot of people are going there and having sightings. I mean, so how many
in Pine Bush?
Yeah, were there other people there?
That first night,
as well as you? Yeah.
No, there was nobody that night that we knew of. In fact, the activity has kind of quieted down for a lot of people. Like, in fact, I find out the aliens are choosy about whom they're going to give their sightings to and how much they give and how long they give it. For instance, there was a couple that came up from New York, and they interviewed me last fall for a documentary film on my sightings and my contacts. And he had told me, his name is Bill Hussung from New York City, and he told me that he went out to Pine Bush to see if he could see anything, because his mother had some kind of UFO sightings years ago around that area. But he went out six times, he said, within a month last summer, and he never saw anything. And then when I invited him out in September of last year, all the ships came out, and in fact they did one of the most incredible one of the ships performed the most incredible aerial movements that just left everybody in amazement. In fact, the ship that performed this was the extraterrestrial girl who is in contact with me, but you probably want to get into questioning me about how this all happened, you know, how I got contacted. And
right. Well, what was the maneuver it did? I mean, as long as you...
Oh, yeah, the maneuver was... okay, the light started to come in from the southwest, and we looked up, and I said, look at this. And all of a sudden, it was like an orange pulsing light. It came in, it stopped, and then all of a sudden, it just started zigzagging to the left and the right in diagonal movements. And it was doing it, it was performing these diagonal movements faster than light speed. It was skipping in these diagonal movements. I think the craft was actually teleporting itself simultaneously. You could see it in two places in a split second at the same time. That's how fast it was moving. You could see it in one place, and then it was not more than a split second later, it was in another place, but you could see it simultaneously skipping around. I got this on video. It's on one of my YouTube videos. Wow. So people can see it. The evidence.
Like you, I'm convinced that the UFOs absolutely do know who they're showing themselves to. You know, after interviewing, you know, I don't know how many hundreds of people, that eventually became pretty clear that when you see a UFO, they know it. And they're pretty much showing themselves to you.
Absolutely, because, you know, they're telepathic. They're mind readers, the aliens. I mean, they're so evolved that all of their psychic abilities are like 100, operating at 100% in most of these beings that pilot these types of craft.
Wow.
Yeah, they're just incredibly advanced beings. And I'm just amazed at everything that's happened to me. I never dreamed. Well, I've always kind of had it in the back of my mind. It would be cool to be contacted by extraterrestrials, but I never knew what was involved and, you know, how what a process you have to go through. And, you know, even then, once you are contacted by extraterrestrials, nothing's guaranteed. You have to live up to the criteria. I mean, the protocol or the criteria that they lay down for you in order for you to be in contact with them.
Wow. So after that first night, I mean, that must have impressed you enough to come back, because when did you start?
Oh, yeah.
Like, what was your
Since I had lived out of the state back then, I didn't make it back there too much, but it was in 2007 that I had, made my return trips. And, so I went back and I started seeing these same, this was in July of 2007. I'm out there in Pine Bush. I'm out there on some, road. I think it was called, I forget the name of it right now, but it's a little bit south of Pine Bush, bordering on the town of Walden. And, I'm out in the middle of this long, long, long farm road, looking up at the night sky, and I see all these huge pulsing orange lights over on the western horizon, southwestern horizon. And I know they're the UFOs because these lights are shimmering orange, plasma-based lights, and they're moving very, very, very slow, almost like a snail moving. That's how slow they were moving. So anyway, I said, I'm going to try and communicate with them and see if they respond to my thoughts. So I just asked them mentally, are you the same beings that I had seen 14 years ago in the craft, in those sightings, that first night we were out here? And there was like three of these UFOs on the horizon, and all of a sudden two of them took off. And one of them just started, after I had made the communication, one of them started coming towards me. And it got to this huge orange shimmering light. And then it got about a quarter of a mile away from me, and that stopped. It just stopped. And I got my camcorder out, and I'm trying to film it. And I'm looking at it. I'm zoomed in on it, and it's putting on a light show. It just started pulsing, and I could see this ring under the craft. I don't know whether it was connected with the propulsion of the craft or whatever, but it was some kind of ring of light, and it separated into two different rings. And unfortunately, my camcorder malfunctioned, so I was not able to record it that night. But I was able to see it and witness that, you know, this craft responded to my thought and came over towards me and allowed me to see it very close up. So
I've always meant to write an article about cases where people's cameras malfunction while they're trying to photograph a UFO, because it happens a lot, and it's clearly not a coincidence. There's
right.
That many cases.
Sure. And so I went away from that night pretty convinced that I had some other sightings a little bit south of that area. I went away, and on that trip, I had some more sightings, and so.
Wait. Let me ask you this, though. When you're communicating and you realize that these craft are responding to your thoughts, did you have any fear? I mean, had you read anything about UFO abductions and things like this? And I mean, because some people got really scared.
Yeah, I had some, because I heard that, you know, there's some grays. There might be some grays and some reptilians species in the area there. I had some fear in the beginning, and I still do occasionally get, you know, anybody, you know, when you're dealing with beings that you haven't really met yet or anything like that, you may get a little bit of trepidation and,
sure.
You know, about any kind of interaction with these kinds of beings, because you just, you don't know. But I have, since they have made contact with me, since after my return home from that trip in July of 2007, now here's the good part. Here's the part where I get contacted. It was but about 3 or 4 days after I returned home from that trip that I just mentioned.
Right.
That, I was home and I was thinking about things. I decided to meditate one evening, and I just started meditating. I went into a state of deep meditation. And, so I'm meditating, and everything's quiet. I'm very calm. And all of a sudden, I just hear a voice inside me, in my mind. And it was announcing itself that she was a pilot of that triangular craft that I had seen on my trip out there that came, that responded to me, and it came near and it stopped. She said she was the pilot. She was the pilot that was in that craft. She said that her name was Abena, and that she was, that she and her people come from Orion, and that their ancestors, she told me a brief background about them, who they are, how they originally came from Orion, and that now they're here in New York State, and they have some kind of a base there somewhere. And that they're here conducting scientific experiments. They're doing geodesy, which is surveying of its soil. And it just so happens that the soil and the rocks around that area are very, very rich. And I think it's several different kinds of minerals, titanium, beryllium, and zirconium.
Right.
And all interestingly, all three of those rare elements or minerals, elemental minerals, are used in the construction of aerospace alloys for, like, you know, aircraft.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
You know,
zirconium, beryllium, yeah. Very interesting. I just thought that was a very interesting part of it. But no, they're conducting experiments, and they've had bases there. They haven't told me how long they've been there or anything, but obviously it's been a few decades.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she goes on to keep telling me that their ancestors were on Earth anciently, and they had colonies over in Egypt, and that their ancestors were the ones that had constructed the Great Pyramid of Giza and the Sphinx.
Wow.
And subsequently I did a little more research into it, found out that the Great Pyramids, that whole complex is aligned with the constellation of Orion. And they told me and showed me that they come from the belt stars of Orion. And those pyramids are exactly lined up with the three belt stars of Orion, which researchers have done a lot of research and found this out now.
I had a guy on the show who actually specializes in that, Robert Boval. He wrote the Egypt Code, and he was the guy who's credited with
Yeah, he's done some great work. And there's another man out named Patrick Garrell, who's written a book called The Orion Prophecy. And he's done a lot of great research on this Orion thing with the pyramids.
Right. So as this lady's talking to you, what are you thinking? I mean, had you had experiences with that kind of telepathy before? And
not really to that degree, because at first I thought, well, maybe this is just a wild imagination. Maybe I'm just hallucinating or something. But then she made a prophecy. I mean, she made a prediction. She said the next times that you come out back to Pine Bush, I am going to be performing some aerial movements in my ship that you will be able to capture on video. And sure enough, it was only a month later. You know, when I was given a prediction and a promise like that, I was certainly going to get myself back out there as fast as I could. So it was about a month later that I made another trip back out. And sure enough, her craft appeared. And she put on these aerial movements, like she said. She started zigzagging around, showing me, diagonal movements in this little smaller reconnaissance type triangular craft. These craft are incredible. They're very sleek. They're about maybe 30, 35 feet in diameter. And they are the most agile craft that I have ever seen. And they can move so fast, and they're interdimensional as well, because they can go in and out of dimension, which I have on video as well. I've seen some interdimensional type of qualities to the craft. But the fact is that which really convinced me about the whole telepathic contact, that it was real, was the fact that she had made the prediction and it came true.
Right.
And wow. Each time I go back out there in the trip, it gets closer and it gets, I get more and she gives me more and more sighting. She comes in closer. She does something a little bit more convincing so that I can get it down and other people will be convinced as well. And during the telepathic contact, she had told me the reason why this was happening was because she said, these were her exact words, I quote, she said, because you have already fairly progressed far enough through meditation and observance of creational laws, we decided that we discerned actually and decided that you were deserving of closer sightings and contacts from ourselves and our ships. Those were her exact words, I quote. And that's the whole reason it happened. And so this tells me the aliens are very open to people that are into self-improvement, self-realization, God realization, if you want to call it that, or, you know, spirit, any kind of spiritual development through meditation. And I've always done this down through the years. I've maintained spiritual unfoldment practices through meditation. And I'm a student of the occult, a student of the occult laws of the universe, like, you know, Hermes' sevenfold laws and, I mean, the seven axioms of Thoth, you know, the ancient right. Egyptian prophet. Yeah, so because I'm sorry, go on.
I'm very interested right there with you, but let me just take a short station break.
Sure.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Bennett, and tonight we're talking with our guest, Phil Koseski, about Pine Bush UFO contacts and his amazing contacts with the Orions and how these ETs are visiting our planet and are interacting with people and basically announcing their presence. And, you know, Phil, I totally agree with you that they're very interesting people who are into self-realization and that whole thing. But I want to remind everyone listening that this is a call-in show. So let me give out the toll-free number if you'd like to ask a question of our guest. If you want have a story to share or comment you'd like to make, we'd love to hear from you. We love callers in. The toll-free number is 888-228-4494. I'll repeat that again. 888-228-4494. Yes, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call. And yes, Phil, you know, what you said about psychic development, you know, it was, in my case, I was totally skeptical of UFOs, and my mom died. I saw her ghost, and all this started to lead me into studying dreams and things like this. And I found out UFOs were real, and I started doing meditation and all that, and had a whole bunch of leaps and bounds in that area spiritually, and started having a lot of sightings and contact. Similar, but to what you're describing, with just a couple of telepathic messages here and there, but nothing to the extent that you're talking about now. You've got to write a book. I hope you're writing a book about this. And,
well, once I calm down, this is really kind of shaken me up over the past year and a half here. I've been so excited and so amazed at it that I'm just so consumed with the idea that it's happened, and, you know, trying to prepare myself and you know, get back out there and do some more filming and get some better video, because, you know, I've never really operated a camcorder before. Since 2007, I've been a real novice at using a camcorder. So some of my earliest video is kind of shaky, and, you know, I didn't have a tripod, and, you know, some of the objects that I filmed are bouncing around, and, you know, some of the camcorder malfunctioned a little bit. So there's a real learning process to using a camcorder, especially when you're filming, you know, nocturnal lights in the sky at night.
Right. Well, you know, no one's ever done, and it still needs to be done, is film themselves going on board a UFO, or film the inside of one.
There's a very slim chance that will happen, I guarantee that, because the aliens, some of them allow it, but most of them really prohibit it, because they don't want that kind of notoriety, because a lot of them I mean, they can transform themselves into, you know, different images, I guess, as well. I mean, they can alter their appearance through some kind of psychokinesis, I think.
Right. You mean the UFOs appearing to be helicopters or vehicles or what have you?
Oh, exactly. I'll tell you that these beings that I'm in contact with from Orion, they're under some kind of a code, in fact, to do that very thing that you said. They will disguise their craft as Cessna airplanes. I have video where one of the triangular craft comes in, but it sounds exactly like a Cessna airplane. They have it, they can copy the sound of almost any object down so perfectly. You would never notice the difference unless somebody had told you that what they're doing is imposing some kind of mimicry to disguise the craft, because they don't want to draw attention. In fact, if they were to fly around ordinarily in their plasma lights, you know, the ship engulfed in plasma lights, and they were to take away, and they were to fly around with the ordinary sound, the propulsion sound that's generated from their propulsion system, which is tachyon-based. If people were to hear this, they would freak out. I mean, they took away some of the normal, I mean, they've let me hear what their ships sound like without the mimicry.
Right.
I got some of it up, and it's very eerie, to say the least. And people not exposed to it gradually would start to freak out, especially in conjunction with the plasma-based lights. Those lights, when I first started seeing them, and they took away the mimicry and the disguise of airplane lights and all this, and they started letting me see the real alien form of these lights, I got dizzy. I got so dizzy I was sick. I started getting sick.
Wow.
Because these lights are so powerful. There's such an intensity about the pulsation of the light that it'll make you sick.
Right.
I started to get sick.
I've talked to other people who've said the same thing, actually. They can feel the light move through them. They said they tried to describe it in different ways. Certainly, these are not normal lights.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so my aliens, they're under some kind of a code, most aliens are, to mimic themselves. So they can, these aliens that fly around over this area, many times they can configure the light on their triangular craft. They can configure their lights into almost any kind of airplane. They can make it look like a Cessna. They can make it look like a jet. And they can make it sound like a Cessna or like a jet. And if you weren't, like I said before, if you weren't trained, you wouldn't notice it. You would never know. You'd be totally fooled. And, you know, they just don't want to draw attention to themselves right now. They only want to reveal themselves to those that are open to them. And, you know, to spark other people that are kind of skeptical. You know, occasionally they will do something out of the ordinary, you know, to convince people.
Well, the fact that they can disguise themselves so well really makes me wonder how many of them there are around. Because I've talked to other people who've said the same thing, that they've seen UFOs disguised as cars and trucks. And
One
guy said he was followed home by a helicopter, and he rushed into his house, and this thing turned into a typical flying saucer right over his house.
Unbelievable, huh?
So they can disguise themselves, definitely, yeah.
In one of my videos from last fall, one of the triangular craft comes in, and it looks like a police car in the air. I think they were doing it a little bit of humor there.
Wow, really?
Because it kind of looks like a police car up in the sky at nighttime, you know, and I said, oh, my. You know, with kind of lights, you know, blue lights and then a red light on top and all this. And I said, this is weird. This is kind of funny.
So
but anyway.
What do you know about the ET or the person who's in contact with you? Do you know her history at all?
Not too deeply, because I'm this, I'm in preliminary contact. I mean, so this is all like introductory with between me and she and I. I will say this though, my third trip out there in 2007, it was October, it was a month after, the last trip when she did the aerial movements. That time, on that third trip, she let me see her physically. She came down on the street in Pine Bush in the area and she let me see her, but she didn't talk to me, but she just let me know it was her. And she was incredibly beautiful. They look Scandinavian, or she looks Scandinavian, or you're like, Swedish.
How did she let you know? I mean, you were walking down the street and you just saw her and?
Yeah, I was in a parking lot, got out of my car and I just noticed this incredibly beautiful blonde sitting in this car next to me. And she just kept looking at me and then all of a sudden I got telepathy. It was her. And, it was very out of place. I mean, their eyes, these beings have ovally eyes. Their eyes are more circular than ours. They're wider. And like I said, they look kind of, Scandinavian. She looks almost Scandinavian, but a little bit more exotic. High cheekbones. You know, very wide eyes, really beautiful blonde hair. So she just let me know it was her. I wanted to go up and just give her my hand and say, is it you? Is it really you? But, they don't allow too close a contact right away. It has to be graduated. You have to earn it. You have to, there's a protocol. In fact, she told me that, she said the reason it has to be this way is because, she said, our brainwave resonance is derived from deep meditational states like TM, or transcendental meditation. She told me they practice a form of meditation that's comparable to transcendental meditation as taught by the Maharishi Yogi.
Wow.
So I've been since learning how to do TM a little more.
Very interesting.
She said comparable, she said like TM. So there's many different states of meditation as long as it gets you into the place. What's really important, she said, is, is to get into the higher state, brainwave states, which are theta and alpha. And not be in beta. So people think, oh, aliens, they're so intense, their vibrations are so much higher. Yes, in their physical realm, when they're dealing with their physical things, they can be in the beta state, but most of the times I will say that these beings are in the alpha and the theta state, because even when they're doing, they're in the physical world, in their ships and all this kind of thing, Their normal resonance of their brainwaves are mostly in the alpha and in the theta realm, because that means that they are much more relaxed than we are, these
right.
beings. So that means they're not as intense as we are in the physical world, craziness down here in this physical world. They really know how to relax. They have a very relaxed demeanor. And they're not excited. They don't get as excited as we do, and jumpy, and all this kind of thing.
Very, very interesting. I'm resonating with what you're saying. I was once at a UFO meeting, and it was a very small meeting, just four or five of us, and one of the ladies was a contactee. And at one point, everyone started getting really sleepy, and I managed to stay awake. My brother, he fell asleep actually, and the room you could. It filled almost a little bit of whitish mist at one point, and it passed, and I didn't think too much of it, but the lady said that the ETs had come and were there, and you could feel their presence, and definitely there was, the energy change, and you almost slipped into delta state, or you wanted to fall asleep.
Yeah.
Just by being next to them.
Yeah, it's very special, isn't it?
It is. And, I think that they are very interested in people who are having spiritual development, and they're interested in that's the thing that's most common, I think, when people have contact. when people are taken aboard a UFO, it's interesting, the most common experience is that they're examined, but the second most is that they're given messages of ecological warnings or nuclear proliferation or taught psychic skills. That's very, very common. Healing, things like this.
Oh, absolutely.
So, we hear so much about these negative abductions, but cases like yours, there's another guy I'm talking to in Nevada. This case is almost identical to yours in a lot of ways.
He's a contactee?
Yeah, and he met these guys face to face once on the street, and they were pretending, I guess you could call it, to be musicians or carrying guitars, and he wasn't sure it was till after they left. But they, again, you know, it was a very similar case to yours, so.
Wow.
It's just very interesting.
Yeah.
Gary White, I think is his name. But yeah, we have like some, let me see, just about 5 or 10 minutes left, so I want to make sure you have a chance to.
Yeah.
Tell what we need, you know.
Sure.
Need to say.
So, go on to the next level. I mean, your interview. I wish I had, yeah.
So, you're writing all this stuff down, right?
I had something I wish my emails had gotten to you prior to the show so that we could have more of a format. But there was a spam blocker up or anything. Anyway. So where's this, the importance of it all, I think, is where it's all leading is that they want us to be, they want us to know that in order to have contact with them, we need to evolve spiritually, and we need to get absolutely serious about who we give our attention to. That's one of the things they told me, is who we're giving our attention to, what we're living for, and the process of unfoldment is a very natural thing when you give yourself over to meditation. It just naturally, it's like stepping into a current in the river, and you just leave everything else behind and get into that current. And when you come out of it, you're like cleansed. And so in a way, and the same thing with meditation, it just helps, makes us aware of that eternal part of ourselves that everybody can prove to themselves that they have a spirit. And that it's capable of communing with the all mind or the creator or the light or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
So, this is, and also about the pyramid and all this kind of thing and what the importance of this is very interesting. I mean, they created those pyramids as a memorial to the builders where they came from, which was obviously Orion, but they also did it because of astronomical reasons. Because of 2012 is one of them. In fact, in 2012, one of the belt stars in Orion is going to line up with the King Shaft of the Great Pyramid, and the light is going to fall through that King Shaft into that pyramid, and it signifies the end of this era and the entering of the age of Aquarius, of that new era, and that we are actually coming into the solar field of Orion and the central sun of the universe, of our galaxy, which is going to phenomenally change and raise the vibration of our whole planet and our whole solar system. And it's actually also going to trigger a pole shift and axis shift. This is also why the pyramids were created as kind of like a time clock. Every so often, these aliens knew that whenever there was the precession of these revolutions, astronomical revolutions around the sun, and around different constellations, that every so often, every few thousand years, it causes an axis shift. And the Great Pyramid was constructed by the aliens in total recognition or total awareness of this precisely, in order to warn the inhabitants of the earth about these things. And so the pyramid is kind of like a time clock for these kind of astronomical events that happen periodically on the earth.
Interesting. Wow.
Yeah, that's kind of the mystery of the Great Pyramid right there, which I never knew anything about until the aliens disclosed it.
Right, right.
And so that's one of the main points of the...
So are you planning to head back to Pine Bush, or is this, do you continue to have contact without having to go there?
Yeah, they give me, I get contact at night usually, and they, when I'm in meditation or just when my head hits the pillow, all of a sudden they'll greet me and I'll, they use telescopic, I like to call them telescopic visions. All of a sudden I'll get a vision of seeing something and I'll zoom in on it in this vision. It's like a zoom on a camcorder. And I zoom in on, I'll see a certain locality or something, and I'm supposed to learn something about. And they'll teach me something about something through a vision about a certain place or a certain object. And yeah, so they keep in contact with me. But
so what does this polar shift mean for us? This is going to happen in 2012, you think? Because this is what they said.
Well, 2012 is the beginning.
Right.
The Mayan calendar, it's also written in the pyramid, the book, the Egyptian Book of the Dead. There's a date in there about, 9792 BC. There was a pole shift that wiped out Atlantis. And it just so happens that in 2012, I think it's 10,500 years later, in 2012, there's going to be another pole shift, and it's written in the book, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, that date, you know, and there's going to be a certain alignment. In fact, the same alignment that was in effect in 9792 BC, is going to be an alignment again. It has to do with Venus and the constellation of Orion and the Sun. And that same alignment is going to come into play again. It's a little bit different this time, but it's still virtually the same. And so what it's going to do is trigger the Earth's shift, axis shift, or pole shift, yeah.
Right.
It's going to cause, in fact, a lot of scientists are predicting that, you know, the sunspots in the sun are going to happen again in 2012. They're going to start up again and be massive. But anyway, what is also important is that, like I said, there's one of the central belt stars of Orion is going to align it precisely with the King's Shaft and the Great Pyramid sometime in 2012, 2013, I think. And when that happens, that really triggers everything. That starts to trigger, it's kind of like a prediction happening, because anciently it was constructed to happen every so often, every, you know, several thousand years.
Right, right.
Like maybe 10,000 years or whatever. So it's very precise, and it happens, has to do with the pole shift, has to do with, that's also leading us, you know, Orion, not many people know this, but the Orion constellation was created to be like a central sun to our solar system. You know, we have the central sun in the middle of the galaxy that regulates everything else. But Orion, our solar system happens to be within the solar fields of Orion, and Orion is kind of steering us in a certain direction, and we are connected to Orion. And that's why, you know, the aliens have left such a legacy here on Earth from Orion, these humanoid aliens that look just like us from the belt stars. You know, there's many other aliens from Orion that are greys and reptilians, and, you know, like Betelgeuse and Bellatrix and the star Rigel, they're also part of the constellation of Orion, and that's where these reptilians and grays come from.
Oh,
so a lot of people get very scared when I tell them, oh, I'm in contact with Orion beings, and they get freaked out, and they don't want anything to do with me because they think it's not, I'm in contact with reptilians and grays and all this.
Well, that's just...
But I have seen them, and some of these grays and some of these reptilians are not all that, they're not all that mean. It's a total lie that people have been led to swallow and believe that, you know, all these grays are evil and even some reptilians are evil. Not all of them are. Some of them are very humane. I've met a couple of reptilians. In fact, there are grays and reptilians in the Pine Bush, New York area. I've seen a couple of the reptilians in that area have contacted me telepathically. Out of the body, I've had out of the body travels and I've met up with them.
Right.
And they're very nice. There's nothing, you know.
Well, it's an amazing story, you know, and I'm totally right there with you. I've had a lot of experience with out of body stuff too. So, it's fascinating how this all goes kind of hand in hand.
It does, doesn't it?
It really does. Well, Phil, I want to thank you so much for coming on to the show. I mean, it's fascinating stuff, and I can't wait to see what happens. And I hope you write a book and put out a video. And where can people go to your website again?
If they type in Orion Nepho, Orion, and then IFO, it's just all one word. If they type that in on Google, they'll come up with my channel, my YouTube channel, and there's links there that go to my other websites. And if they just type in anything by Orion Nepho or Orion IFOs,
okay.
Or the Pine Bush Zone is another thing they can type in on Google.
The Pine Bush Zone. Okay.
Yeah, that's my website, and I have a lot of videos there, and I have my blogs there so people can read about what happened. And there's cool, you know, music there and all kinds of things.
Awesome. Well, thanks again. It was amazing. And I wish you the best of luck.
Well, thank you for having me on. It was great to come on and share this with you.
All right, everyone. Well, that is our show for tonight. I hope you've enjoyed it. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight has been Phil Koseski. We've been talking about his amazing experiences in Pine Bush, which led to a telepathic contact with beings from Orion, which led to actual face-to-face contact, which is still ongoing. An amazing story, and only one of many of these kinds of stories that are currently going on our planet today. Very exciting stuff. I hope you enjoyed the show as much as I have, and I hope you can join us next week when I bring on another exciting guest on UFOs and the paranormal. Until then, have a wonderful evening and a great week. Bye now.